Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at FanRag Sports and college hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at FanRag Sports and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. New text and voicemail line 331-979-1369. Leave all of your text messages, your voicemails, wherever you're listening to the show, whenever you're listening to the show, interact with us. If you've got questions, comments, anything that you've heard over the last 48 hours about Michael Porter Jr. sliding up the board, Kevin Knox being projected to go to at the Bulls at number 7 by the Ringer, any of the comments that you want to leave it for us at 331-979-1369. Today's show, we have not only a little bit of Michael Porter Jr. audio from various analysts, but also Trae Young working out for the Bulls today, and as well as Kevin Knox being projected to be moving up the draft board and the Ringer having him at number 7 as their projected mock draft. So we're going to start with Trae Young, but first, before we do that, Matt, how you doing?
Doing all right, Jordan. What's going on, Bulls Nation? Looking forward to what is apparently going to be like a record-settingly warm weekend in Chicago. And in the meantime, as I said yesterday, World Cup kicked off today, U.S. Open, some really ugly scores in this first round, a nice distraction. You know, I'm gonna keep an eye on NBA draft talk over the weekend, of course, because that's what I do, but I'm going to try my best to enjoy a nice, beautiful summer weekend here in Chicago and then come in Monday ready to go for that home stretch for this NBA draft.
Very exciting. It's almost less than a week away, so next
week from tonight, man.
Week from tonight, so exactly 7 days from today, we will find out who will be joining the Bulls at number 7 and at number 22. So first of all, I want to get into Trae Young. We'll talk about him because he's working out for the Bulls today and wanted to get some of your thoughts. I have some audio from Michael Wilbon of ESPN. He was on ESPN 1000 yesterday. He said a couple interesting things that sparked my interest, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it as well. So we'll play that in a couple minutes here. Trae Young showing up into Chicago, arrived here yesterday. What are your thoughts? What do you think the Bulls' thoughts are going into his workout today? And is there anything Trae Young can do to make the Bulls feel like they'll be higher on him going into this draft, especially everything that we've heard about Michael Porter Jr. recently over the last 24, 48 hours? What were you expecting from Trae Young's workout today for the Bulls, and exactly how high you think that they are exactly on him?
I hope that the words that we got about a week ago, that the Bulls were, you know, enthused or whatever, the enamored with, right? That was the phrase that was used by Vincent Goodwill in Trae Young, and they were also high on Colin Sexton. I hope it was all a bunch of BS. I agree with what Wilbon was saying on ESPN 1000 the other day. I just don't like Trae Young and what he projects to be at the NBA level. He is so undersized. It was kind of mean of me, but there was somebody, maybe it was either Darnell of The Athletic or Nick Friedel, somebody tweeted a video of him shooting free throws at the Advocate Center. My first thought was, even just staring him standing at a free throw line, I was like, that guy is tiny. That guy is so small. Like 6 feet tall wearing pumps, maybe. So I quoted it with the little music emojis and sang the little We Represent the Lollipop Guild song from The Wizard of Oz, because that's what I think of when I see that kid. Oh, I'm sorry, I don't, look, if he does turn into the next Steph, and I've said this before, wow, good for him, and maybe we'll all be wrong. But I'm sorry, the kid can't, you know, this is a quote from Nick Friedel, who's there watching Trey's workout at the Advocate Center today. Trey said he will, quote, change the narrative regarding what people think about his defense. I don't believe you. I do not believe you. The kid can't play defense, and he's less than 6 feet tall. I don't know what the Bulls, where the Bulls have him on their board right now, but it better not be anywhere above Wendell Carter Jr. or even Mikal Bridges. Shouldn't be, in my opinion. Absolutely not.
So I want to get to that audio real quick from the Waddle and Sylvie show yesterday. They had Michael Wilbon on, and he was on and a little bit aggravated about some things with the Cubs, and then it tailed off at the end of their conversation about asking about the Bulls and Trae Young. So I wanted Bulls fans who missed this, or Bulls fans who don't live here in Chicago and don't listen to Waddle and Sylvie every day, I want you guys to hear this, because Michael Wilbon brings up a couple good points.
All right, as we let you go here, you came in aggravated. I'm going to send you off on your merry way a little bit aggravated. Trae Young working out for the Bulls tomorrow. I know much you love him.
I know. Did you see that thing today about the biggest bust potentially in the draft? It's some ESPN analytics thing. This is like Mitch Trubisky. I wish the kid well, each one of them. It doesn't mean like I want to expend my resources on either one of them. And I hope I'm wrong, particularly in Mitch's case, because he's already a Bear. But I mean, we've just seen the entire playoffs have just shown us about small guards. And especially, Trae Young's the smallest guy out there. I mean, he's tiny. He's diminutive. The playoffs have shown us about injuries, about being overwhelmed by bigger, longer players. The NBA has gone to long and athletic. And one of the reasons the Warriors can do what they do is because Steph Curry, and it's funny, somebody gave voice to this recently. Isaiah Thomas, during a dinner we had recently, Isaiah said, hey, man, people need to stop calling Steph Curry a small guard. Steph Curry's not 5'11 or 6 feet tall. He's like 6'3 and a half. He's ripped. He's slender, but he's not tiny. Man, this dude, Trae Young, he's a tiny dude, man. He's 6 feet. And that, where in the NBA is that working? Chris Paul almost got a team in the finals at that size, almost. And Chris Paul, I ain't going to say that. My mouth will not utter the words Trae Young is Chris Paul. And I look at him and I'm like, really? You mean to tell me they don't have more use? I'd rather see the kid who didn't play for Missouri, Michael
Porter Jr., yeah.
Michael Porter Jr. I'd rather see them take a flyer on a guy who's had an injury. I like this. I like the kid from Duke. Wendell Carter. I can see any number of players. Listen, I like the kid from Villanova, Mikal Bridges. You know, I like him. I want to see somebody who can do multiple things. What can somebody who's 6 feet tall do? Multiple things? No. One thing. Play one position, guard one person. And are you saying you don't like Chris Dunn? Is that what the Bulls would be saying? Because Chris Dunn, to me, has much more upside than Trae Young. At a time when multiple positions and versatility are undeniably ruling the day in the NBA on the teams that are worth a damn, what is a 6 foot, 160-pound guard, how does that plug in to the philosophies that are ruling the NBA, versatility and multiple positions? And I don't get it, and it seems like they're determined to draft this kid, and I'll be forced to say, okay, I hope it turns out. But I just go into this thinking, really? Are the Bulls at a point where they're determined to show you that they're going to do it their way, or are they going to do the best thing for the franchise going forward, period, and get it right? Are they going to get it right and climb into contention, or are they got something to prove? I don't know what the answer to that is. I'm not saying I have the answer, but a drafting of Trae Young would suggest that we know what the answer is.
All right, Matt. Wilbon brings up a couple different really good points, and I think one that we're overcasting ourselves on a little bit when we're talking about some of these prospects and whether or not the Bulls are going to take a risk on a guy, say, as Trae Young, Michael Porter Jr., or, I mean, you could even toss in Kevin Knox at this point with the conversations that have been going on in the last 24 hours. He brings up a very, very good point that I don't want this to get lost on Bulls fans as we're heading into draft night. He said, are the Bulls going to do what is right for the organization and what is the best possible way to make this team succeed in the future, or are they going to try and do it their way and ignore everybody else, ignore everything that has been said about some of these prospects and where they're headed in this direction, and are they going to try and force it and do it their way and not care about really what Bulls fans think or what the rest of the league and analysts and college basketball analysts are saying about some of these guys? And he said, if they do take Trae Young, well, then you can pretty much answer that for yourself. I thought that was a very interesting point, and we'll get to some Fran Fraschilla audio later in the show about Michael Porter Jr., and he says a sentiment pretty similar to what Michael Wilbon had said there. So what do you think of that? What did you think of Michael Wilbon's comments overall on Trae Young?
Well, I mean, I agree with him, obviously, about the fact that he's undersized. And he also makes a good point about, in today's NBA, it's all about athletic, lengthy, tall guys who can play multiple positions, point forwards, guys who can create their own shot off the dribble, and it's hard to do that if you're very undersized as Trae Young is. Steph Curry is really the exception, and Michael Wilbon also brings up the good point that, like, people refer to Steph as undersized. He's not woefully undersized. He's, you know, somewhere around 6'3", and he's not skin and bones. He's got a decently strong frame. He's had some injury issues in his career, but Trae Young is significantly shorter and smaller than Steph Curry. And, you know, what undersized point guards are going deep into, you know, multiple playoff series winning teams? Because I'm not seeing any. I mean, I'm with Wilbon 100% on this. Enough of the Trae Young talk. I mean, I don't know what the Bulls are going to get out of these interviews and his workout that they had today, but I'm hoping that whatever they saw from him, they downgraded him from whatever their previous ranking of him was on their draft board. Because I've said it before, I'll say it 1,000 times, I don't want the Bulls anywhere near this
kid. So just real quick, Trae Young's measurements, because I know this has been a talk about him and Steph Curry and being compared, and Michael Wilbon brought up a really good point about Steph Curry and Trae Young and the comparison going on there. Is Steph Curry isn't an undersized guard. I think that it's more about his body type than anything else, and that's why he gets categorized into the smaller type of guards. But Steph Curry is still 6'3".
That's what I just said, man. It's like totally, if you're comparing Trae and Steph, people compare them because of the range shooting ability, but Trae is way more undersized than Steph.
So Trae Young's measurements without shoes at the NBA Combine was 6'1", with shoes on, he was 6'1", 1¾". His standing reaches 7'11½" too. So the comparison should be more so as far as body type and size goes, I think, to Kemba Walker. And you look at Kemba Walker, and he might be the exception to this. If you got a guy coming into the league that isn't a hard-nosed defender, and the way Kemba Walker has sort of has that edge on defense, I agree with Michael Wilbon in the fact that I don't understand and don't see how Trae Young is going to be able to stay on the floor on the defensive side of the ball and guard some of these guys. Think about all the guards that are in the league right now. Putting him up against a guy like, say, for instance, Steph Curry, or having to switch off and guard a guy like Klay Thompson, or anybody else in this league, John Wall, Bradley Beal. Think about trying to have him guard in a duo with him and Chris Dunn side by side and having to switch off. That's asking a whole lot of Chris Dunn, and I don't see it. Like you said, undersized, underweight. Look, Trae Young has phenomenal handles. He's got a passing ability and a vision on the offensive end that not a lot of guys in this draft have. He can shoot the ball from pretty much anywhere. My biggest question about his offensive game, too, is he going to be able to get these shots off against defenders that are 6'4", 6'5", with a standing reach of maybe 8 feet, with long arms, being able to defend? Is he going to be able to get that shot off against some of these guys and be able to create his own shot? Another thing that I'm worried about, too, with his game is being the ability to drive to the basket. Is he just going to get stuffed the way Isaiah Thomas gets stuffed all the time at the basket and at the rim? Like, he found creative ways to score when going to the basket.
I mean,
but
he's crafty. He's crafty getting to the rim, and he's decent finishing at the rim, or at least he was at the collegiate level. But it gets a lot tougher when there are bigger and stronger trees that you're trying to navigate through.
So regardless of what's maybe is being said about Trae Young and people that are high on Trae Young too, I just don't see the fit here. As far as I get the fact that maybe you want to take a swing and try to roll the dice on this guy. I get that, but I just, as a competent basketball fan, and I think a lot of our listeners are competent basketball fans as well, there's a lot of concern.
And you mentioned, like, it's a valid point to bring that up, and you mentioned earlier, well, you got Chris Dunn. Chris Dunn is one of the better defensive point guards in the league, or on his way to being one, and he can kind of mask Trae Young's weaknesses on that end. But you turn that argument on its head, and you're saying, okay, if that's the case, then you do actually plan on playing Chris Dunn and Trae Young together in the backcourt. And all of a sudden, if it's Trae Young being the ball-dominant player, because he can be a shoot-first point guard, but he can also be a crafty passer, you're asking Chris Dunn to play off the ball as a two-guard? That makes no sense, because Chris Dunn can't shoot. Chris Dunn can break down a defense off the dribble, and he has a good mid-range game. And we're hoping that he's getting better at finishing at the rim this offseason. We'll see if that happens. But he is a good distributor, but he needs the ball. Turning Chris Dunn into an off-ball shooting guard when Trae Young is running the offense is the most idiotic thing I've ever heard of.
I agree with you. And so that brings up the point of, okay, if they do draft Trae Young, they might move Chris Dunn then. Might trade him and look to see what they have. And even what we said, maybe throw him out there. Chris Dunn, Cameron Payne, Trae Young, Zach LaVine, all four of those guys, and just throw them out there next season and see what you have, and take one or two of those guys that you don't see a fit and try to move them. Same thing goes for if they do decide to move Chris Dunn. If you're going to put Trae Young at your starting point guard position, you've got Zach LaVine playing the two, they're going to score 60, 70, 80 points a night. Like, the two guards that you're going to go up against night after night, they're going to score 70, 80, 90 points in a night. And that's where I don't see it, and I can see Markkanen and Trae Young developing some chemistry and playing very well together, but I have way too many concerns about his size and his defensive abilities and whether or not this offense can translate to the NBA. I think that's something that's being under-evaluated as far as whether or not he's going to be able to create his own shot in the NBA and whether or not he's going to be able to get some of these shots off he had at Oklahoma last season in the NBA. And I still just have question marks about it. And, like, look, I said, if the Bulls do draft Trae Young here, I will be very disappointed in it, but I'm not going to be pissed off. I'm not going to hate the pick or anything like that.
I will.
Well,
plain and simple.
If they take Trae Young, what's going to happen?
We represent the Lollipop Guild, the Lollipop Guild.
Can we stop talking about this guy right now? It's making me mad.
All right, let's move on from Trae Young. But before we do that, we got to take a quick break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, we're going to go through Michael Porter Jr. and some of the news that has come up in the last 24 hours since we recorded. Possible Kings pick, him canceling his pro day, and some of the things going on with his medicals as far as his hip spasms and all of that. So we're going to be right back here on Locked On Bulls. Stay with us. Be back in 60 seconds.
Well, of course, and you know, whether it's John Paxson is not going to, you know, Jerry Reinsdorf is saying, hey, look, we're going to invest, you know, $9 million on this guy, even though he's got a bad back. That just doesn't happen in the NBA, and it can get you fired. So they're going to have to make sure that, and they probably have by this point, that his medical evaluation on the back is thumbs up all the way. Otherwise, you know, if you stare at two or three guys you like, you're going to be less likely to take Michael Porter. Now, I'm watching and reading the draft blogs, and everybody's talking about when he played McDonald's game and this and that. I saw the one game he played this year, which was the most meaningful game he played in his whole career. Not hurt, versus Kansas in the Hurricane game, the Hurricane exhibition game in November. 20,000 people there, meaningful game, huge rivalry. They never play anybody anymore, and he went 5 for 20. Now, doesn't mean that he's a 5 for 20 guy. It just means that Kansas took a couple 6'6" guys, got right in his grill, and made it miserable for him because he plays upright. Does he have a chance to be a stretch four and be a prolific scorer in the league? He does. But I have some questions about his overall athleticism
And, you know, and again, the back becomes an issue. Now, if he's there at 7, completely clear medically, you're going to take a look at him because he's got – but he does kind of duplicate Lowry Markkanen a little bit, you know, in terms of being a stretch, you know, stretch 4, stretch 5. So, you know, maybe that's something that, you know, Freddie Hoiberg and John and Gar can talk about and say, hey, we take these two young big guys and here's how we can play. But, yeah, I have my doubts.
All right, that was the voice of Fran Fraschilla. He was on Cap and Company on ESPN 1000 yesterday talking about all the prospects that were working out for the Bulls and what would be available at the top of the lottery. One thing that wasn't a part of that audio, but he felt like the best fit were for the Bulls, was Wendell Carter Jr. And I think you and I agreed that that would be a pretty decent pick should the Bulls take him at number 7. But I thought it was interesting the way he talked about Michael Porter Jr. and whether or not they would take the risk on him. And it goes similar in the sentiment of what Michael Wilbon had said about Trae Young and about the pick in general. And he said, will John Paxson and Gar Foreman be willing to go to Jerry Reinsdorf and say, you know what, we're going to take a risk on a guy at number 7 that we're going to have to pay probably about $9 million a year for the next 5 years that has back concerns. And look, he just had to cancel his workout because of hip spasms. Like, these little red flags concern me a ton. And it seems like the ongoing narrative about this front office is might be a little bit diminished as far as the national media goes. But they're talking about guys and not taking risks and using these risks as a reason why they would get fired. And that's exactly what we talked about last week. Late last week, I said, you know, if we're talking about who we want, you and I want on this Bulls team compared to what Gar Foreman and John Paxson are going to do next week on Thursday, if I had to place my bets, they're going to take the safe pick, because if they roll the dice on one of these guys, this might be the last opportunity for them to do that before it gets them fired. Like, how bad of a setback it could be if Michael Porter Jr. turns into a bust, or if Trae Young turns into a bust, or if they reach on Kevin Knox at number 7 and he ends up being a bust. A lot of these guys are high risk, high reward players. And where in history does it say that the Bulls take a chance on a guy like that? Not too many instances where the Bulls roll the dice, and not only that, but they're successful in rolling the dice.
Yeah. I mean, plain and simple, the Bulls can't afford to miss on this draft pick. And that's why, whereas it might be less sexy of a pick, you and I are shying away from Trae Young. We're shying away from Michael Porter. A guy like Wendell Carter has probably one of the higher floors of any of the players in this draft. Same thing with Mikal Bridges, or even Miles Bridges of Michigan State. The point about the Bulls front office and whether or not they are risk takers, and the fact that in recent history they haven't been, is regardless of all of the talk you hear about, oh, well, Michael Porter Jr.'s been here in Chicago for the offseason and his agent's here and he really wants, and all of these various things, and the latest canceling of his workout today that was supposed to be largely for other teams because the Bulls have already had their time with him. Everybody's saying, like, well, Michael Porter clearly wants to get taken by the Bulls. He wants to fall to 7. He wants to be here. I'm not buying that the Bulls are hoping and crossing their fingers that Porter Jr. falls to them at 7. Because they, I mean, and this is an interesting point that Ricky O'Donnell, a friend of the pod, said in his latest for SB Nation today. You should definitely go check that out. It was like all different hypothetical scenarios and best options for the Bulls coming into the draft. The best case scenario, if the Bulls do swing and miss on a guy like Michael Porter Jr. and say he like misses most of his rookie season with an injury, or he plays but he's bad because he's rusty, or he's just, the potential isn't there that everybody thought they saw. The silver lining is that the Bulls are right back into the NBA lottery again next year, hopefully with another top tier pick. In, you know, even if it's, again, they have like the 7th worst record as opposed to the 1st worst, with those lottery changes coming up next year, the Bulls could find themselves with another top tier pick. That's the silver lining if they swing and miss this year. But that's a pretty ugly, terrible silver lining to have, because Paxson came out and said, we don't want to be tanking again next year. We wanted this to be a quick rebuild on the fly, and we don't want to go through another season like the one we just endured. So they cannot afford to swing and miss. They have to hit on this pick, which makes me think that even if it's maybe a guy with a little bit lower of a absolute highest skyrocket ceiling potential, they have to take a player that they are confident will come in and contribute and make this team better right away. And to me, there are too many question marks around MPJ, and there are too many question marks around Trae Young for them to feel confident about either of those guys 100% without a doubt making this team better right away.
So what? So the growing opinion I'm getting from you is you'd rather see the Bulls play it safe here at number seven, and instead of rolling the dice and taking a chance on one of these guys, say is Trae Young.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This Bulls team is bad enough right now that adding Wendell Carter Jr. or adding Mikal Bridges or adding Miles Bridges would make this team better. Off the bat, right there, boom, there you go. That is a better team. Not a sexy pick, but a better team with way less risk of being a bust. And the Bulls cannot afford a bust right now.
You don't have any concerns about taking a guy that's 22 years old as far as the timeline of this rebuild?
Given the fact that the 22-year-old you're referring to is Mikal Bridges, no. Because if there's one position in this league where guys can play and be effective late into their careers, it's 3-and-D wings. I mean, look what Andre Iguodala has meant to this Warriors team in the late stages of his career.
I'm with you on that, too. Michael Porter Jr., look, if the Bulls decide to take him and take the risk, I'm all for it. I'm on the opposite end of you, Matt. I would rather see the Bulls take a risk the way in which they did last year, taking Lauri Markkanen at number seven, rolling the dice, going against maybe what they feel like would be the safer pick here. And take a chance. Take a chance on a guy if you are really high on him. Any of these guys, too, that might fall. Like, we talked about in our Locked On NBA mock draft how Marvin Bagley slid all the way to seven. Now, we don't realistically think that that's going to happen, but there are some other guys that all it takes is one team to really mess this all up and see guys start to slide. So, to me, I want to see the Bulls take a risk, whether or not that's the Kings taking Michael Porter Jr. at two and somebody like Luka Doncic falling all the way to four or five, taking the risk to see what it would take to move up to take a guy like that. Or at number seven, if in fact the Bulls scouting team feels like Trae Young is the best at number seven, take the risk. If Michael Porter Jr. is there at number seven, take the risk. If they like Kevin Knox and they want to reach on him at number seven, take the risk. I'm about it if they are fully invested in the guy that's number one on their board. But if it's playing the game of, well, I don't know how competitive he's going to be. He can be a very good player, but the upside isn't NBA all-star, NBA superstar. I don't understand exactly what your argument was right there. Is this team is bad enough to be able to take a risk right now? Adding a player that you can plug and play like Mikal Bridges. And look, I like Wendell Carter Jr. too, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad pick. It's more of a safer play, and it's a project guy at 19, but I want to see them take the risk. This team is bad enough, and you've got question marks at Chris Dunn. You've got question marks with Zach LaVine. Markkanen's really only your sure bet right now. If we're at that stage right now, and the Bulls are looking at themselves and not going to spend money this offseason, not going to look to make trades to grab younger assets, then take the risk on the 19-year-old. That's my argument here, because if we go into another season where, yeah, you take Mikal Bridges or you take one of these other safer plays and they turn out to be very good NBA players, I still don't see how that gets you any closer to an NBA championship or back into the playoffs for that matter.
That's a fair point. And you're willing to look past all of the red flags that are attached to Michael Porter Jr. right now. Not just a back injury, not just these weird hip spasms that we learned about today, but the attitude problems and the fact that all sorts of people are talking about the fact that he's a diva and a bad teammate. You don't care about that. I do. It's not even really that hard. It's right there on the surface when you listen to Michael Porter Jr. at the NBA Combine, some of these interviews. He seems like kind of a diva.
Honestly, I don't care about that at this point. I feel like there's enough guys in that locker room.
Bulls locker room just got rid of a diva problem with Jimmy Butler. You want to add another one?
Jimmy Butler and Michael Porter Jr. are two different things, though. We're talking about somebody at 19 years old. Like, remember when you were at 19?
A 19-year-old who's already had back surgery, Jordan. I'm sorry. If you're willing to look past that, that's fine. I'm not. That is a gigantic red flag to me.
Matt, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going through articles, and this was available on fanragsports.com. This comes from the Fantasy Doctors, and this is a podcast and a blog from all accredited doctors. And this one comes from Dr. Miriam, and this was published one day ago. This is talking about Michael Porter Jr. and what his back injury actually entails and the details of it. It reads as followed. NBA hopeful and University of Missouri's Michael Porter Jr. is watching his draft stock soar. However, not without questions regarding his health. Porter suffered a disc injury in his first collegiate game and subsequently went underwent surgery. Let's take a closer look at his specific case. In general, a microdiscectomy is very effective at treating herniated discs and relieving pressure on one or more of the spinal nerves in the spine. From that standpoint of the surgery, most players are able to make a full recovery. The biggest risk is a recurrent disc herniation, with a risk about 5%. There's nothing about a straightforward microdiscectomy that should prevent Porter from returning to the court. Of note, the L3-4 disc may be a source of future issues in his back as he gets older, but this is difficult to predict. So just take that into concern. I looked at the risk of him reoccurring disc herniation at 5%. If that's true, and there's 5% risk that maybe he might get re-hurt,
you're right.
I'm okay with taking the risk and rolling the dice and taking the gamble.
Yeah,
on.
Yeah. I don't care. That 5% number is completely arbitrary.
This comes from a doctor board certified in neurosurgery by the American Board of Neurology.
I don't care. I don't care what a random certified doctor said. What I know
I
is that he's a 19-year-old kid who has already had back surgery.
Certified doctor.
I don't care about the various percentages and likelihoods of certain, you know, individual discs in his back being slipped again or rupturing again or whatever the hell it is. I don't care. To me, it's as simple as this. 19-year-old back surgery, character issues. No. Not when the Bulls can add a good player at that spot. There are good alternatives that do not have that risk attached.
All right. We'll find out. We got to take another short break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Kevin Knox to wrap up this show, what we think about him and what the Bulls might be thinking about doing at number 7, should some of these guys be off the board. Stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds. All right, we're back real quick just to touch on Kevin Knox, because this is a name that is now being thrown into the basically the pool of players that the Bulls might take at number 7. The Ringer published their updated mock draft and had Michael Porter Jr. going at number 4 to the Grizzlies. They had Marvin Bagley going number 2 to the Kings, leaving the Bulls by reaching and taking Kevin Knox from Kentucky at number 7. Now look, we haven't talked extensively about Kevin Knox at all because he was projected to be somewhere in the late lottery, anywhere between 10 and 14. I like his game and I don't hate it at number 7, but I think I hate the fact that they would reach and take him at number 7. I feel like there's a way that the Bulls could find a team to try and trade up if they want Trae Young, and in this mock draft, Trae Young is going at number 9 to the New York Knicks. So in the scenario that we were talking about yesterday about flip-flopping picks with the Knicks from 7 to 9, if Kevin Knox is your number 1 player on the board, you got to look at every opportunity to try and trade down and gain a couple more assets, especially if guys like Trae Young are still on the board, Wendell Carter's still there, those types of players that maybe some other teams that are in the late lottery, 9, 10, 11, might want to move up and take. And if there's any possibility that the Bulls say, you know what, we want to go with the sure bet, Michael Porter Jr. is already off the board, and we want to get a guy that's going to be at the wing position, and we feel like Mikal Bridges or Kevin Knox are going to be there at 9, 10, or 11, you got to trade back. I understand the Ringer's argument about Kevin Knox being taken there, being a versatile wing. But the other concern I have with Kevin Knox is he's projected to be a 4 in this league. And we already have our staple at 4 in Lauri Markkanen. So to me, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And if they do like Kevin Knox a lot, then you got to trade back. What are your thoughts?
I think the Ringer is ridiculous for putting Kevin Knox at 7 with the Bulls. You know, maybe they're just trying to spice things up. I have heard that Kevin Knox has been gaining ground recently on this draft board and on a lot of people's draft boards. He must be crushing his pre-draft workouts because there's all sorts of noise about him leapfrogging guys like both of the Bridges, which to me doesn't make any sense. I look at the game, the NBA ready elements of those three players' games right now, and I have Knox as 3 out of 3 between Mikhail, Miles, and Kevin Knox. I like the measurements, physical tools of both Bridges. You know, Mikhail is kind of longer and he's a better shooter, whereas Miles is probably the stronger and more athletic of the two. But I like both of their physical traits better than Kevin Knox's. I mean, I think this is just like a weird last second, let's shake up everybody's draft boards trend that's happening with Kevin Knox right now, and I'm not buying it.
Yeah, I'm with you too. I don't think the Bulls would reach on a guy like Kevin Knox unless they're looking to trade back. The one thing that I tossed out there when we were talking about him a couple weeks ago was that he reminded me a ton of Tobias Harris. And Tobias Harris, when he came into the NBA, started as playing at the three and realized pretty quickly with the Orlando Magic and a couple of the other teams he was with, the Pistons and the LA Clippers, that his best position is really playing the four and playing underneath the basket and being able to spread things out. So if that's the case, the same case with Kevin Knox, I don't understand the fit. It's the same way that the same argument that...
Then the fit is the Bulls banking on Lowry eventually playing most of his minutes at center. As he progresses in his NBA career.
And I don't know about you, but I don't really like that idea.
I don't love it, no.
So, with that, taking a guy like Kevin Knox, okay, sure you can do that, but I have the same concerns about people who were saying, why would you take Marvin Bagley when really he's projected to play the four and he should play alongside, and he would be used best by playing alongside a rim protector. So, it's the same argument going on there as well, is like, yeah, you're not really drafting for positions, say, but more so the best athlete available there. With Kevin Knox, it just, to me, if you force him to try and play the three, which from some of the evaluations people have had, he's not a guy that can create his own shot really that well. Sometimes he gets lost, takes bad shots. I need to see more of him, and I don't know if he was used at Kentucky really, really that great. And sometimes at points in the season I felt like he was used in a weird way, or he had to feel like he had to force some shots up. So there are some question marks with Kevin Knox, but if the Bulls moved back and maybe talk to even the Clippers, if Kevin Knox is still available at 12-13, you try and make a deal, or you take somebody at number 7, and if you really like Kevin Knox and you see him falling, or same thing with Mikal Bridges at number 7, you try and make a move to try to move up for one of these guys in a versatile wing like Kevin Knox or Mikal Bridges can be. But I'm not really buying it either at number 7.
And your point about maybe hypothetically trading down, if it's there, if the Bulls are really not stoked about anybody on the board at 7 and they find a trade that they like, obviously the two Clippers picks is a scenario that's been talked about a lot. You mentioned also Denver at 14. If the Bulls feel comfortable about making a move down and maybe taking a guy like that later and have a good confidence in which guys will be taken in the picks between where they are at 7 and where they're trading down to, I'd be okay with that. I wouldn't love the idea. Personally, as I've said before, I don't think a trade up is likely. I would prefer that they take the player that they deem to be the best available player at 7 as opposed to trading down, unless they can get like... Maybe if it's both of the Clippers picks, I'd feel okay about that. But to me, like, they're right there on the cusp at 7 of the top tier players in the draft. And my gut tells me I would just rather see the Bulls take the best player at 7. Unless the deal that they're getting to trade down is a really, really good.
One last question for you. So if they do decide to trade down, what would you have to have as far as a starting conversation to move down? Like, if you're talking to some of these teams like the Knicks or the 76ers or the Hornets or even the Clippers who are the back end of the lottery, what do you have to have in order to move back?
So I guess like my two stipulations would be getting two first-round picks in this draft. So moving down a few spots to get two. And there are only so many teams that could actually make that happen. Or moving down a few spots, so essentially swapping picks this year, maybe a pick swap in the future, or an unprotected first in the future. That's what I would want.
Yeah, I think that's the starter too. If it's the Clippers, then I need both of those picks, and I don't even know if that's enough. I don't even know if those first two first-round picks back-to-back are enough. And the way that the Dallas Mavericks were talking about at number 5 and the offers that they had made for to us in our mock draft, that seemed insane. And if that's the asking price to move back, then I've got to have at least more than two picks. And like you were talking about, maybe a future first round pick with limited protections on it. So to me, I think the Bulls have to look at themselves and say, you know what, if we can still get the same guy or the handful of guys that might be available at 10, 11, 12, or even at 9, and we can gain another asset, I don't hate it either. I think that would be a smart move. should the draft go the way that we think it's going to go and nobody slips or nobody decides to take Trae Young at 4 like the Grizzlies did or Michael Porter Jr. at 2 like the Kings did. So I don't hate it either. I just think that the Bulls need to make sure that they don't get fleeced as far as moving back. And I don't want to see another trade exception or the way in which, you know, all these protections get added up on these first round picks, the way that we saw it with the Luol Deng trade and the way that Kings pick ended up turning out to be, which was basically nothing. I don't want to see that happen as far as protections going into the future. The Bulls got to go to a team, especially a team that's outside of the Clippers.
That's what I'm saying, man. The Bulls are in a position where they need to add a player in with this seventh pick. And that's why I said I was even skeptical and hesitant to do a trade down if I were in the Bulls front office's position. They need to hit on this pick. And the further they go down in the first round, the less likely that is to happen.
Very true. So very interesting information coming out. Tomorrow we're going to do mailbag. We didn't get into it today. But make sure if you want to leave any of your reaction of anything that we talked about today or yesterday's episode, leave it for us at 331-979-1369. You can leave us text messages, voicemails. That's once again 331-979-1369. You can always hit us up on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Pack, or at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, or subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Today and tomorrow are the last days to enter for a Dennis Rodman giveaway. Autographed picture from Dennis Rodman. It's a fantastic, fantastic, fantastic giveaway. So please, if you want to enter and you're still thinking about it, all you have to do is go to iTunes or your favorite podcast provider. Leave us a 5-star review. Tell us a memory about Dennis Rodman, something that you liked about his game back in the 90s and what he meant to that Bulls squad. If you want to do that, it takes literally 30 seconds. Screenshot that review and you can text it to us at 331-979-1369 or email it to us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com.
Come and get it before I decide to keep it for myself.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.